because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol, but a lot of politics this week, J.R. So we're drowning in national polls, but we finally have our own numbers, the Marquette University poll. Well, okay, let's open with that. Let's talk about the Democrats. Margin of error, Hillary lead over, Hillary 45% over Bernie 43%, but then in that margin of error, 6.5%. So dead heat?
Yes, and what's interesting is, you know, with polls, you sometimes look at the movement more than the snapshot. The movement was 12 points in September, 9 in November, now it's 2 points. Now, with a margin of error so large, it could be kind of anywhere in that range. But you are seeing a tightening, which is just like we're seeing nationally with Bernie and Hillary, where he's been gaining ground. Iowa, New Hampshire is a focus right now, because if he does well there, even pulls an upset in Iowa, a mild one, and wins in New Hampshire as expected, all of a sudden now she's down 0-2 start the race. That's not good for her. So
on to South Carolina.
Yes. So this is kind of a key stretch for them to see whether he really has a chance to wrest the nomination away from her.
And what intrigues me, JR, if you look at Hillary, she's at 45% in Iowa, according to Mr. Franklin. But nationally, the last six polls on Hillary had her up between 48 and 55%. So we in Wisconsin like her a little bit less, but now let's talk about Bernie. The last six national polls on Bernie had him at 41 to 34%. So this suggests Wisconsin Democrats like Hillary a little bit less and Bernie a little bit more, which I find absolutely fascinating.
What's interesting, though, is if you go look at the favorable unfavorable ratings inside the poll. Mm-hmm. And this is on the, you got to go look for these. But
oh, you went through the cross tabs?
Hillary is above 80% with Democrats, and Bernie's only above 60%. So he's not as well known as she is. So it seems like Democrats in their hearts maybe like the Bernie message more than their minds know she's more electable. Because then you go to the second question they asked was, who do you think will be your nominee? Mm-hmm. And overwhelming Democrats said Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So it may be a battle of, what's my ideal presidential candidate versus the one that could win the White House? Because let's be honest, I mean, with both parties, the kind of the more base elements, if you will, are not representative of the middle, the people who decide these elections, you know, come November. So they may have a little bit of a, I like him so much, but I think she's the one that, kind of thing.
More electable.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, on the Republican side, the Marquette, Mr. Franklin's poll. The latest one, Trump 24%, Rubio 18%, Cruz 16%, Carson, the biggest takeaway here is bye-bye, Ben?
Yes. Just like nationally, he has cratered.
More in Wisconsin?
It's a good question. It depends what point you look at. But for the last 2 months, he's been on a downward kind of spiral, and he's kind of dropped off the face of the earth. But the Trumpster is there and is strong. It's interesting that he's been fairly consistent. Remember, one of the first things we noticed was when Governor Walker dropped out and said, get away from Trump, and he still did well anyway in that first poll post-Walker dropping out. He went from second place to first. In talking to people, there's been this expectation for months that, Trump will fade away. This will all go away. It's not real. Mm-hmm. And he's not going away. So the question is, you ask people, why? You know, he seems to be capturing something in the Republican base, which is obvious. He's not from the establishment, so he doesn't have some of the baggage of a Jeb Bush. The question kind of becomes, what's going to happen in this primary that there may be a moment of reckoning for Trump, Cruz, and a Rubio, for example, where the establishment goes, we don't think Trump can win. We don't think Cruz can win. Rubio or insert other Republican's name here, we think he or she has the best chance. We'll coalesce around her. The problem is that hasn't happened yet. And now we're less than a week out from Iowa.
Yeah, 3 days.
There's no cratering for Trump and Cruz. And by the way, I don't get the impression talking to folks that Trump or Cruz will drop out and leave a one-on-one, because if you're a Rubio, a one-on-one with a Trump or a Cruz is your best chance, right? Mm-hmm. That because you clear choice between this element of the party or this one.
There were elements of that in the Des Moines debate last night.
So, but without them, one of them dropping out, and now they seem to be doing that, you have a harder time getting that one-on-one opportunity. So it's interesting to watch. Will there be a moment in the next couple months where the establishment coalesces around a candidate and says, we have to stop Trump and Cruz, and is that moment already passed? Have they already lost their opportunity to stop those guys and become the nominee?
Do you think Rubio is second in Wisconsin, at least in Mr. Franklin's poll, partly because he has such a high-profile cheerleader in Wisconsin in Speaker Voss?
If you went out and surveyed Republicans and asked them if they knew that Robin Voss, no offense to him, had endorsed Rubio, I don't think the response rate would be very high.
Okay.
Look, endorsements are nice. They don't tell the entire tale. They aren't like, they don't dictate what happens in a race. So it's good for Rubio to have that. Remember that in October, he got Voss and a slew of especially younger Republican leaders in both houses to endorse him. Since then, nothing has happened. Nobody's really kind of coalesced around anybody. You've seen occasional endorsements, but not a big one, because they're still waiting to see what's going to happen, I think. So it's not like that's gave Rubio a ton of momentum. I mean, it didn't hurt, don't get me wrong, but as far as momentum, I don't see it.
You do politics full time. When you want to call somebody about the Trump campaign, is there a equal to Robin Voss who you call for Trump? No?
Not
who do you
I
call? National?
We don't know. I've been asking around. I don't know of any campaign right now that has a paid presence in Wisconsin. I've been asking around here and there. There are endorsers. There are people who support him. But as far as I don't have a good Trump contact, if you sit here right now, I've been asking about it. I've also kind of wondered about a Supreme Court race first.
Understand. Yeah, since there's a primary February 16th.
Yeah.
Yeah, understand. Just to round it out, is there a Wisconsin contact for Cruz who you do business with or not?
Honestly, I've not gotten to that at this point. Trying to keep my do as much as I can, as efficiently as I can right now.
Okay, and then let's look. Trump is at 24% in Wisconsin, but nationally, he's polling between 31% and 41% in six mm-hmm. recent polls. So Wisconsin Republicans like him a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And let's look at Rubio, national. Six recent polls, polling between 7% and 13%, yet he's at 18% in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin Republicans, at least on Mr. Franklin's poll, like Trump a little bit less, Rubio a little bit more, mm-hmm. and Cruz, it's kind of a wash.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating. Are you getting the sense that our April 5 primary is going to matter?
At least for one party. The question continues to be for Bernie Sanders from the national media is, can he make it through a South Carolina, the Southeast, the SEC primary, they call it, which are these southern states with large African-American populations? I've seen polling that has him doing better, the African-American voters, but is that going to be enough to survive those and come out on the other side with momentum, or that he can really challenge her? Resources come into play, operations come into play. I mean, there's a long way to go to figure out where that one's heading. The Republican primary looks a little messier
yes.
because it's getting more focused. But
yep.
But when you ask folks about the Democratic one, they're like, yeah, it's not that clean, really. And he's got a shot to make her life miserable for a while. So it could be, we could really matter come April. And this we will be in a window where we're the only state for like a week from a week before us and maybe a week after or something like that. So we've got a good window to be important if it does come to that.
This is more fun than we junkies are allowed to have, isn't it?
It's interesting.
New topic. Okay, let's connect two dots. First dot, three sentences from Governor Scott Walker's State of the State speech. We have some of the best schools in the country, but we need to do more for our students to succeed in the 21st century. In the past, we enacted major reforms that help schools reward great teachers, improve curriculum, and balance budgets. Now we need to do more to reform state government and put these savings into public education. Then, when Mr. Franklin asked the question, local public schools get enough state aid? 57% of the respondents, 806 respondents statewide said too little state aid. 30% said enough state aid. Only 7% said they get more state aid. What did the governor know about public opinion, and when did he know it, J.R.?
Oh, we talked about this, I think, last week a little bit, that even conservative Republican lawmakers who are not big spenders that I've talked to in the Capitol said, I can't go home anymore and keep selling a budget that keeps spending by schools flat by putting more state money in to drive down property taxes, not to allow them more breathing room. That's become an issue. They recognize that, and they'll have to fix something. I think the other question that poll was, if there were a referendum in your district tomorrow or
yes.
whatever it was,
yep.
would you support it? And more than half said yes.
I think it was about 60%.
Yeah. So it shows you that the public wants more to be spent on schools. That message from Democrats about they're not doing enough for public education is resonating. And I think they're going to try and address that in the next budget. The question is how much money they have, where they find the resources to do it. Walker's talked about finding efficiencies in government.
Mm-hmm.
How much can you save to make a big dent in education spending?
That's why he hinted if we could save $40 million by self-insuring for health care, I'd put that right back into public education.
Mm-hmm. So last week at the teachers' convention, or education convention in Milwaukee, said we want to spend more, but not with a quote-unquote blank check,
yeah.
and that the money he would save would not go to the choice program, though there would have to be a conversation about that expansion and going forward, so
yeah.
and how it's funded.
Okay, topic three. Democrats said, Governor, you're taking, you're going around the nation, and you've got your bodyguards, mm-hmm. Who are our state capitol law officers, and really taxpayers ought not to pay for that. Mm-hmm. And so now the governor's two campaigns, and I'm going to ask you the difference, have now paid $257,478 to repay for presidential travel and security. Scott Walker, Inc. paid $149,000. Our American Revival, $108,000. I'm completely lost on this, JR. What are these two separate organizations?
So Scott Walker, Inc. is his presidential campaign. And then Our American Revival is the political operation Walker created a year ago to kind of, it was an exploratory committee because he wasn't exploring for president. He was promoting ideas at the time. That was how they sold it.
Yeah.
So that was a group that was created to help push his ideas, if you will. I think in the original mix of records we got, there's also a little bit of money from his state campaign. They now said, well, that wasn't really the presidential campaign. But anyway, it's still $250 and change that they had reimbursed the state for. And it goes to show, you look at those records, interesting is, under the deal, if I got this right, you know, if he put an extra number of hours into the political operation, it would be all covered as political for his security detail.
Yeah.
Look at every day in July and August until he dropped out.
It was
100%
yes.
covered by politics. Now, yeah. doesn't mean every hour a day was spent on politics, but it shows you that he was spending at least half of his day, or whatever it was, every day on politics at the time.
What's the term on the governor's official schedule that you and I get?
Hold time.
Hold time.
Now, that can cover anything. It could be him getting a haircut or, you know, something that's personal. But it almost always matches up with days he's doing political stuff. So that's kind of a good indication when he's doing things that are not state business.
Is the governor's, or are the governor's two campaigns, Scott Walker, Inc. and Our American Revival, are they now able to say, we have repaid all travel and all bodyguard costs?
DOA said it's all taken care of now.
Okay, no more bills to be paid, no more bills outstanding.
No.
And it must be interesting to go through some of those incidental costs. Which
well, we just get
like
a summary. I mean, a lot of it was travel for the, I mean, it's travel. It's, you know, hotels, cars, plane tickets. You know, those guys, they have to be with the governor, so wherever he goes, they have to go with him. So that's the bulk of the expense.
Does this cover the overtime for the state, for the
I don't know off the top of my head.
For the Capitol Police?
I don't think it does. So. They covered half of the internet cost of the residents. They covered his mileage when he was driving in or being taken around in state vehicles, and then the security detail costs. Those are the big things.
Fascinating.
And for the First Lady as well.
Yep. Okay, next subject. Law officers, Attorney General Brad Schimel, UW Chancellor Rebecca Blank, and GOP legislators agreed to move a bill quickly. Mm-hmm. I find it a pretty interesting bill. If you're a victim of a sexual assault, or if you witness a sexual assault and you're underage, you have amnesty. You cannot be charged. You cannot get an underage drinking citation.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty novel because of let's say it bluntly, the extent of binge drinking on Wisconsin campuses, isn't it?
Well, what was interesting at that news conference was UW-Madison officials said our policy already is that we don't ticket you if you are a victim who's reporting an assault or if you are helping that person. Now, they say that reports have gone up, that policy's been in place, but they've also had other programs to try and encourage reports.
Yep.
So you can't, let's say, well, cause and effect because of that. But they say it's one more barrier you can take down to help encourage people to report sexual assaults and get those addressed.
And the number, only 5% of some, one estimate, only 5% of campus sexual assaults mm-hmm. are reported to law officers. Now, this is on a fast track. It's already been approved by Assembly Committee.
They had a hearing yesterday, I believe.
And I think it came out unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
So we could be debating this.
They've got 3 days on the floor coming up, the 9th, 16th,
February
and 18th, 9th? I believe,
yes,
in Assembly.
I think you're right. Anyway, the first day is February 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, when Speaker Voss said, I'm going to raise per diems because my members say they cannot get hotels in the Madison area at $88. So he raised them 57% to $138. Didn't he also say this would be cost neutral to we mm-hmm. taxpayers, JR?
Yes.
And it didn't.
No, it came in higher. There was supposed to be a tweak that those who stayed overnight got reimbursed from those who made day trips, if you will. It seemed to, you know, help those who were coming from a long way and had to stay in Madison. You know, if you're in Bayfield and coming out, you don't make a day trip to Madison. You come down for the week, essentially.
Right.
But if you're in Milwaukee, the suburbs, an hour away, it's a much different story. The idea was hotel costs have gone up. We haven't changed per diem since 2001. Voss argued at the time, it's time to kind of address the real cost of this, but it'll be revenue neutral because of the way we changed the formula. However, it came in higher, even though they claimed fewer days overall or the 12 months of
per diems last year totaled 992,478, and you have to compare that to the last state budget year of 2013. It was up 7.4%. It was no surprise. Joint Finance Chairman Nygren led 16,970. Democratic leader Peter Barca, 16,000. You had a first-termer, Representative Jimmy Boy Edming, at number three at 15,939. Boy, he came back and forth a lot, huh?
Well, it depends. I mean, some of these guys make it a full-time job, and that's a different approach, if you will, for per diems than if you are coming here 2 days a week and that's it. Or only come on the floor. Nancy Vandermeer, I think freshman,
she was the lowest. Nine days,
that's it. Right. It's a much different approach to be a lawmaker than if you're saying, okay, this is my full-time job, I'm going to be here Monday through Friday, or whatever it is. So, yeah, that's probably what drove up a lot of their costs. And now with Nygren, the budget took much longer than it used to, or
went
we have been
overtime.
Accustomed to with Republicans in charge. Went to July, first week of July, they knocked out of finance.
The governor announced when, on the 17th or the
23rd? He announced the 14th, around 14th. There, 13th he signed it. Yeah. So they finished off the deal around like July 4th, before July 4th weekend, something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, fun times.
Okay, but as a result of being embarrassed, it wasn't indeed revenue neutral. It cost we taxpayers more. What are the limits in place for 2016?
The same deal on how many days you can travel, like get reimbursed, but a cap of 80 days overall for the session. Now, they're going to be done in the assembly, on the floor at least, by February, whatever, 19th, I think that is. So they shouldn't have any problem with that.
Right.
It's more the folks who might be using this coming in March, April, May, whatever, do other stuff. It should be pretty dead in the Capitol after they adjourn, so it should be hard to stay under that limit, if you will.
Let's talk about the Senate. Now, it was I felt it was unusual when Speaker Voss said we're going to $138 per diem, and Senator Fitzgerald said, well, we're staying at 88. So as a result, I mean, he led, obviously, he's the leader of the Senate, 14,872. That is about 2,000 under Nygren, followed by Joint Finance and Schools Committee Chairman Luther Olson. Kathleen Vineout, not in leadership, but she was at 12,000. And Sheila Harsdorf, a member of Joint Finance, 12,000. Senator Tim Carpenter, not in leadership, at 11. Those were the top five in the Senate. And it's interesting because you have Assembly per diems up 7.4% over 2013, and the Senate 6.4% under 2013.
Well, you know, the one thing that's interesting, I haven't had a chance to go count days on the floor, but the perception has been for the last couple of years that they've been kind of, they meet less frequently and do more while they're there. So whether that has a role in it, I haven't got an apples-to-apples comparison to give you, but that might be part of it too, that the days are dropping in both houses being claimed.
Yeah, okay. Let's look forward to the Iowa caucuses. You know, I was a reporter and editor for 12 years in Iowa. I've been to several caucuses, and they are the darndest things. You go to a church, a school, a community center, or a home, and, well, first of all, if you want to go to a Democratic caucus, you have to register as a Democrat. You go to a Republican, and that is a public record. It's compiled statewide. So you go there, you meet your neighbors, and depending on the number of people at this church, I looked up my old Des Moines address, and if I wanted to go to the Republican caucus, I'd have to go to a junior high school. Okay, so you go there. They're your neighbors. There's this rally. Donald Trump is the best. You know, Ted Cruz is the best. Rah, rah, rah. And then you divide up, and the whole key is viability. If you don't have a viable number, and that viable number is governed by the number of people at the precincts, then you have to either join another candidate or remain independent or go home mad. It's just a fascinating process. And there, I looked it up. 1,681 precincts in Iowa are going to be having this neighbor-to-neighbor dance. And this isn't counting the telecaucus, and I don't know how the hell that works. It's really a lot of fun to cover. But what things do you think people should be looking for out of Iowa's caucus?
Trump's turnout operation. So he has this support in the polls, but will they turn out and go? Now, I grew up in Iowa. There's not a lot to do there on a Tuesday night in the middle of January, early February.
It's Monday.
Monday. It's a little bit cold. So who's going to be passionate enough about Donald Trump that not just to answer a poll question, say, yes, I support him, but go do this process where you stand up and argue for this guy and everything else?
Yeah.
That's one thing. Cruz, well, same thing. Will he be able to turn people up better because he seems more invested in some ways in the total ground game we're used to? With people like Rubio, it's a game of expectations. Now you're seeing now that Rubio is rising in some polls. He's trying to tamp down. No, I'm not going to place third. It's going to be much lower than that. That way, if he does place third, you can go,
it's
hey.
It's a home run for him.
I didn't put any effort.
Momentum into New Hampshire.
I didn't put any effort in there, and I got third place. This shows that I've. So you're trying to play an expectation game a lot of times in Iowa with these caucuses. That I always point out to people, in 1992, Bill Clinton finished third. But he was the winner because he survived this, you know, storm of scandals and was a comeback kid. I think he won New Hampshire or something like that and was off and running. You know, so that, I can't remember New Hampshire, but anyway, it's the perception game. That's the most important thing at times, which is odd in politics. Because what, in 2012, was it Santorum? Who like barely edged Romney?
Santorum and Huckabee won the last.
They didn't go anywhere.
Nowhere.
So, but they had expectation because they have tapped into social conservatives that they would do well there. So it's a whole different game with these things than it is in a normal election. So there's that to watch. The Democratic side, it's been fascinating to watch some of the polls that are showing that the people behind Bernie Sanders would be first-time caucus goers versus Clinton's kind of foundation of more like regulars, if you will. Mm-hmm. Will those first-timers really show up and go out there and do this process? It is not like you and I going, now show your photo ID, you know, check in, show your photo ID, cross, feed it to the machine and go home.
Right.
It is a process.
It's a long process.
Yes.
And so you have 1,681 precincts, all of them calling in. And they're calling in at, you know, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 a.m.
I'm not staying up, by the way, to find out who wins.
Well, you're not going to Iowa.
No.
But the Journal Sentinel is sending a contingent.
Yes.
So you have the idea of the deadlines on the East Coast, you know, the Times and the Washington Post, they're going to have to write something based on about 3% of the turnout, whereas other news organizations, well, actually everything now is 24 hours, but the results dribble in, they're tabulated, they're calls back. It's just an amazing process. And after this, nobody cares about Iowa.
No.
It's just on to New Hampshire, on to South Carolina. So it's Iowa's moment.
It's all
in
about
the
momentum.
Sun. It really, really is. But it's the heart of grassroots politics. And as you said, whose fans are going to turn out?
Yes.
Oh,
and Iowans take this seriously. This is their
civic duty. What do they ever?
Those who are involved care passionately about it.
That old adage about one Iowa man saying, "Well, I don't know if I'm going to vote for Trump or Cruz or Rubio, because I've only met him 8 times. Old adage. Okay, let's talk Wisconsin or Wisconsin Politics stock report. Rising.
So Russ Feingold won the Marquette poll, still has him with a double-digit lead. That's staying fairly consistent. But two, he reported, I think a week ago, his campaign said we're going to raise $2.7 million from the fourth quarter. Now, Ron Johnson's campaign has not yet released his number, and they're due this weekend. That should tell you something. Now, he may surprise us all with a big number, but the expectation has been lowered that he will come in behind Feingold. That would be the second straight quarter that happened with a full quarter of reporting in. That's not a great sign. Now, here are a couple of caveats to all this. Republicans think they have an issue with Feingold on national security. They aim hard on that. This Toma VA thing, they're trying to really push hard on the story about the possibly hand-delivered memo from 2009, whether he knew about it before these problems got more attention, and this Marine had died, by the way. Trying to tie that all together, so they think they have an issue there. Feingold's folks say, look, Ron Johnson got mud on his feet from the Toma thing, too. It's going to be a wash. These other things are going to go away. Ron Johnson can't break through. His poll numbers were in good shape. The thing from what Franklin said yesterday was people aren't really tuning in yet. If you look at the numbers compared to November, the number of people who say they don't know or have an opinion about these two gentlemen went up. They took a mental break, if you will, from the election over the holidays. But Ron Johnson's got an issue where it's at 41%.
I was going to ask
5 years in office.
41% don't have enough information or just don't know. Excuse me, I interrupted you.
We're 9 months out from the election. At what point does that change? Now, his people think we can run a bunch of positive bio ads or supporters. He runs a bunch of positive bio ads. That pumps his number up. He's going to be in okay shape after that. Democrats say, look, people have taken a look at Ron Johnson and said, I'm not interested. They're more likely, if they don't have an opinion, to go to Feingold than they are to flip back to Johnson. Yeah, I've looked at you, but I'm going to go back to you again. So that's something, not a great situation for him. Also because if you look at the endangered list out there of incumbents, he's always like number two behind Mark Kirk of Illinois, who people basically have given up on at this point. If Ron Johnson can't raise money to prove he's viable, close the gap in the polls, the outside groups go, well, I don't know if I'm going to invest there. And you need those outside groups to help you if you're, you know, it's a cycle. You've got to try and prove viability. So he's got a tough task.
So you've
right
got Feingold rising because he's been able to maintain this 13-point gap, the November poll and the January poll.
Plus the fundraising numbers. Now, in talking to people, I don't think it's going to be a 13-point race come November. It's going to be closer than that. But that the numbers aren't getting any better for Ron Johnson, and we're 9 months out. That's an issue for him.
Okay, mixed. Guns.
So we have an interesting dynamic where for several years in Marquette polling, or it's 2012, concealed carry was almost dead even. All right, those opposed and supported it. It has swung in favor of concealed carry by 60-some percent. That was kind of interesting to see after we've been so deadlocked for years. Apparently the experience of almost three years now of concealed carry, people have gotten more comfortable with the idea. At the same time, this Republican proposal to allow concealed carry on school grounds, not popular.
Not popular, 2-1.
And more than 80% of people want background checks for private and gun show sales.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that is that's the President Obama's like initiative, if you will, on guns. That shows that people are okay with the carrying, but they want to have a lot of safeguards in place, if you will, if they're going to have a gun.
Yeah, that should someone with a concealed weapons permit be allowed to conceal carry on a school grounds? 64% no, 31% yes.
There's a reason why Robin Voss said, I support the concept, but we're not going to take it up this session.
Good point. Falling.
So, Scott Walker, look at his poll numbers in Marquette. They're not moving. Now, he has lots of time between now and 2018, and he's been dropping more and more hints that I'm serious about this. I'm thinking about running 2018. I've got to have a reason for it. But he's stuck at near historic lows for job approval rating.
Okay, but his job approval did not go down. It was 38 in November, and it's 38 in January.
Still, more than 60% don't want him to run for a third term.
61%.
Now, it's still out. And here's the thing. Even some Democrats say, look, the guy deserves some time. You know, he off the presidential campaign trail in September. It's kind of this weird part in the legislative cycle. He's got some time to recover. It's a better gauge 4 to 6 months from now. Let's see his budget, you know, what's in there. Governor Walker says he's going to wait till late 16, maybe early 17 to make a decision about a reelection bid. There's time for laying out a vision. But it's not going to be a fun budget unless revenues pick up. We saw a report last week that they were, you know, they're treading water a little bit lower than they were before.
$94 million less than projected.
Do you expect to be a rush of cash they can spread to schools and tax cuts?
Nope.
So it would help him greatly, from people I talked to turn this thing around sooner rather than later. Now, the flip side is Democrats will need somebody to run against them. You can't beat somebody with nobody, all these other factors out there. But it's not, again, he's just still not recovering. And if you look at the numbers closely, independents really unhappy with him. Now, he can, I think it was 83% of Republicans were had a favorable impression of Walker, approved of his job. So he's got, Republicans usually been 90% plus with Walker. So there's an easy way to bump up your numbers there. But independents.
Right.
They're underwater big time, and that's where he's done well before, and he's going to do well again.
Don't you think, in the stock report this week, you could have also picked unions in light of this new Bureau of Labor?
Got to read the report 4 o'clock this afternoon and see the whole thing.
Oh, well, okay. Sorry to step on your report, but I'm just intrigued because the news story was in 2015, 8.3%, only 223,000 Wisconsin workers were members of unions. That's less than the U.S. average of 11%. And in 2014, the percentage of union members in Wisconsin, 11.7, 306,000 workers. Read your report. Maybe you're going
to
mention that in
the
afternoon report.
I went to the BLS yesterday and asked, well, how far back do you have state numbers? They only go back to 2005 for the state itself. It was 16.1% in 2005. That means in a decade, it's almost cut in half.
I'm going to write that down. How much was it?
16.1% in 2005. That's the earliest number they have for a state breakdown that I could get yesterday.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting is 2015 was the year that we saw right to work pass in Wisconsin. I don't know that that is the cause of the drop because all those contracts that were signed when the budget was, or the law came into effect in March, I think it was, they remain in effect. Once those peter out, you might see a bigger drop. But you are seeing an accumulative effect, I'm sure, of Act 10.
Yeah.
We've known for a while those roles have been dropping because of that. Because if you're a teacher, for example, or a government employee, you're going, okay, look, I can only have my union bargain for wages. And those wages are capped.
At inflation?
What's the incentive to pay that money? And that was part of the plan from Republicans with, hey, this is going to really hurt unions if we do this. But there's just not an incentive for some people to be involved. Now, ask me, people will tell you, the folks who belong are really energized and involved and engaged in campaigns and will turn on help, but the roles just aren't there anymore, and it's not going to get better, barring some change with what's coming with the right to work law.
But that was a very interesting number. In 2015, only 8.3% of Wisconsin workers were members of unions.
Yeah, and it dropped out. It had been, even there was a slight uptick after Walker took office, probably in response to Act 10, but we're trending down. That's been true nationally, too. We've been trending down. This year, we dropped below the national average, which was unique as well.
Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And next week, let's talk about the five bills that... five or six that are really going to... it's a coin toss whether they're going to pass this session.
Sounds good.
Thank you.